think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 128 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Announcements this week. Not nearly as exciting as the last few that has been.
It's pretty wee, but it's kind of nice.
It's still nice. And I got excited about when they were posted on the internet, and I got even more excited when I went home that day and found them in my mailbox. So our first announcement would be,
and Summer, let me tell you, she like said, okay, I'll be back in a little bit.
That's not what happened.
And she went to the bathroom.
That's not what happened. Okay. I sat out on the couch and looked at it like it was no big deal.
After dinner, she did that.
I did not need to be alone. I had no shame.
Okay, I did.
There was no shame in my game.
It's not about shame. You just want privacy.
I didn't need it. I was happy to share my love of this magazine cover, which is what we were talking about, which is the Entertainment Weekly, a magazine cover. It's the first magazine cover. Well, it's the first
like feature.
Well, but they were on the cover of like TV Guide, weren't they?
I think so.
But this is the first like entertainment magazine that's not like, because when I, no disrespect to TV Guide, but to me, TV Guide will always be the little booklet your grandma had that told her what time different TV shows came on
the side of the Lazy Boy.
Yeah, I mean, it was never, I mean, it's like the Reader's Digest of Entertainment Weekly magazines. But this is Entertainment Weekly, which is more of a, you know, I think it's a little more substantial entertainment magazine. So this is the first, I would say, substantial magazine cover that not just one of the actors has had, but that the show has had. And they were featured quite prominently. There were a lot of pictures.
Not only were there a lot of pictures, there was a lot of Jamie and Claire.
I mean,
mostly cool. Claire, but
there was a lot of Jamie as
Jamie
well.
Jamie booty?
You didn't see her booty.
Oh,
you saw side boob.
Not boob, booty.
I know. I said I didn't see her booty.
You didn't see crack, but you saw booty. Oh, heck yeah. Maybe even on the cover. But there were like, you saw like almost
side boob.
A ton. When I think side boob, I think of what you show, what shows on the side of a dress. Like if someone wears a dress that's cut really like far out a little bit. No, this was beyond side boob. This was boob with no nipple. But you saw boob.
So it
you
was
saw a lot of
it
boob.
Was Facebook appropriate then. And Instagram appropriate. Nobody would have.
Is that the rule?
Pretty much.
Oh, okay.
It's unfortunate. They have that whole campaign that was like hashtag free the nipple.
Oh, I did not know that.
You need to get online more often.
I'm already on way too much. Well, I just don't need to look
branch.
At that.
You need to branch, my friend.
Branch.
We also got 5 new character portraits. And I mean, there were more than 5 pictures, weren't there?
No, just 5.
No. I mean, that's not true.
These are new characters.
Okay, but they released.
New to season 2.
Okay, but they were not the only character shots.
Yes, that's correct.
But there were 5 new characters that were featured, but there were character portraits mm-hmm. of many, many others.
Jamie and Claire and...
I almost said the Dougals, but Dougal and Colum each had one.
You know, Mr. and Mrs. Dougal.
The Dougals. I don't think Angus and Rupert had one, but I know definitely Colum and Dougal had one. But the new characters featured are the Bonnie Prince Charlie.
Mm-hmm. It's Andrew Gower.
Louis the 14th.
Lionel Lingelser.
Yeah, that's it. Louise de Rouen, Claire Simon, and Le Comte de Saint-Germain.
Pretty much. Stanley Weber. Holy. I mean, you don't even need to, you can cover this dude, you can cover him up, and just, and I mean, he like owns that wig. That is some thick wig hair. That's no joke. I mean, he's got really nice hair if you've seen him in like in a show or anything. He's got crazy nice hair, but he just owns this. He owns the character. But look at that.
I stand by my original assertion that I never imagined this character being attractive when I read it because he was
either.
Such an a-hole.
Me either. I imagined him. I don't think Diana described him as unattractive necessarily, but for some reason, because he is a little bit of a baddie, I always imagined him as kind of this, you know, really well dressed, but kind of scrawny and nasty.
I wouldn't have gone so far as to make him scrawny or anything. I just saw this general bad person. Like, I have such a disdain for the character that even if he were the most attractive man in the world, he would be just ugly. So that's.
But Stanley Weber's not ugly.
He's not.
So Summer's a little conflicted, y'all.
I'm having problems.
Hopefully his, well, I know his act, from what I've seen of him in other shows, films, his acting is great. I just hope that I am sure. Okay, put it this way. When I saw that Stanley Weber was cast as Saint-Germain, I was like, oh, very nice. And I think my reaction was like, I don't know what I expected, but that wasn't that. Like, all stars and all the casting people are like casting these really good looking bad boys. I get a little conflicted there. But I didn't have enough of a history of knowing this actor to have an opinion before I never saw him in anything before he was announced. Whereas when my favorite baddie, Tobias Menzies, was announced as the dual role of Frank and Blackjack Randall, I immediately...
You made Siri talk.
Okay, so here we are talking about the Comte Saint-Germain and Summer's phone, which is on silent. Apparently something I said twice now has turned Siri on.
It thought you said, okay, Siri, or whatever it is that you have to say.
What was it? I don't even know what I was saying. So let's...
Let me turn the automatic Siri off.
Okay. Summer's going to turn her Siri off.
Good. That was funny, Siri.
So I wasn't hearing things, and it was from that side of the room.
Hey, Siri. So it sounded like it must have thought you said, hey, Siri.
So apparently somehow I said, hey, Siri, or I thought I did.
And then if you were listening, it called me Sassenach because I
Oh, Summer had it set to Sassenach. Okay. So basically when Tobias Menzies was announced as BJR/Frank, I had a nice reaction. Not conflicted at all. I'm like, oh my gosh, he will be, other than who's the guy for many years people thought would have done a great, is it Jason Isaacs? Jason Isaacs was in my brain and in many other Outlander fans' brains who embodied, especially in that show, in that Mel Brooks. Not
the
Mel
Patriot.
Brooks. The Patriot, but who's not Mel Brooks? Who's the guy?
Mel Gibson.
Thank you, Mel Gibson, not Mel Brooks. Jason Isaacs embodied that role or that character. When I saw him, I thought, oh my gosh, it's Blackjack Randall. The long hair, oh, everything. And of course, that didn't happen. It was Tobias Menzies, whom we all love and adore, or love to hate at least. I've been pretty open about this. I love him as an actor so much. In everything he's done, I am a little bit conflicted. Do I think Blackjack is great? No. Do I think what he did is nasty or wrong and evil? Yes. Not nasty because it was a dude, as we said, just nasty because of just the way he did it and nasty, twisty, evil dude thing. But I like him so much that I have a heart, and I am, not because of what he does, in spite of what he does, I am attracted to BJR, or at least Tobias's BJR, the look of him. Stanley Weber, I had no preconceived notions about. So I don't think is he attractive? Absolutely. Do I think I would be as attracted to him as a baddie as I am to Tobias as a baddie? I don't think so.
We'll see.
Because that's different. Oh,
we'll
gosh.
See.
Man, I hope this doesn't become a thing.
It could be. There's one more character portrait we can talk about.
I just had a thought. Holy Moses. Oh, yes. We'll get there in a second.
Oh, Lord.
I wonder... quick question, and we don't know the answer to this yet. If and when, well, no, we know there's going to be a premiere. There have been too many things that have already happened, and we know there's going to be something in New York at some point. On that red carpet, who do you think from season two, who was not in season one, will be there? Do you think these people will? Like, I can see maybe Claire Sermon not being there. I can see maybe Stanley Weber being there.
I don't know, because season one, well, Leary was there season one.
That's true. So maybe so Mary Hawkins.
Maybe. But then again, it might just be.
The main ones?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. It would be so awesome if little Fergus. Oh,
that would
but
be weird.
They're not parading him out. But they're not parading him out for this
he
stuff.
Be past his
so
bedtime.
I don't think they'd bring him to it. Anyway, let us know what you guys think. Who do you think will be at the red carpet?
Who would you like to see at the premiere? Red
okay, then that's good. Two questions. Who do you think will be there? And then who's your dream list of being there?
Other than me. Because I know you would all love to see me there.
And then the last one, Summer, you're right. We had one more.
We do have one more. And that would have been...
Talk about perfect
Mary
casting.
Hawkins.
Rosie Day.
Who... Her eyes are so big that they dwarf everything else about this girl. And she literally looks like she's all eyes.
And like
and corset
12.
And like bustle. Like she. It was really good casting. They found a woman who looked very prepubescent and childlike. Like she looks very China doll tiny.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they're. Literally, left and right, there's nothing we have seen, especially being so slightly obsessed with the books. There's nothing we've seen in casting. Well, okay, I take it back. There's something you've seen. Was it Father Bane? That's like the one casting thing that you didn't like, really? Now, was that a casting thing, or was that a how they cut it thing? Not Father Bane. He was fine. The Father Anselm.
Yeah, that was weird.
Sorry, Father Bane was actually pretty darn good. No, Father Anselm. Okay. But was that more of the casting or the acting or how he played it? Or was it the way it was cut or written? Because it was written differently in the book, right? Or they didn't include much of it. That was something that Diana fought for a little bit, just to even have that.
The scene with the monk in the monastery?
Yeah.
He was not written to cast. I mean, he wasn't written to type. That was not how he was written in the book. But, I mean, it was fine.
So that's not necessarily a casting thing.
No, well, more of a... it could have been a writing thing. It could have been a casting thing. It could have been we met this actor and we wanted him. And, you know, we found a way to make it work. So, and it was fine. You have to disassociate yourself from yourselves from the books at some point.
Oh, well, hopefully.
And just kind of be okay with it, which can be difficult at times when it's things that you loved and things that were important to you. That part for me was not that important.
And before we forget, or
because
I should say before, I always do, we have someone joining us again this week. Who might that be, Summer?
It depends. Are we going to talk about her as
It depends? You mean like she's not sitting there or she is sitting there?
I mean, I could call her Nehruzu. I could call her
I think you pretty much do.
I could call her,
you're talking about me like I'm not here.
Are you here?
I'm here.
Welcome, Lene, back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So we decided to have her join us. For this pretty short, there may be shorter chapters, but not many.
It's pretty short.
It's ding dong short. So,
No.
Oh, that was not very good.
If there's a ding dong that short, I'm not interested.
I am so not interested.
Okay, so why don't you tell us about introduce our?
Are we just moving on?
Read along.
All right. Well, then now we're moving on to our read along. This week we are discussing chapter 39 entitled "Family Ties."
Connie writes, family ties go beyond marriage, beyond bonds of affection or blood. So that's a nice little thing to keep in mind. Well, where we will see in the discussion of this chapter, different variations. That's redundant. Different variations. Variations of the theme of family ties, different
and
kinds of families.
For real, all I really think about when I hear family ties is sha-na-na-na.
And I actually looked it up and I listened to
it.
And there's a lot of thought on whether it's sha-na-na-na or sha-la-la-la.
In my head, it's sha-na-na-na.
I understand. And I had that too. But I looked it up and it sounded like la-la-la. And then all these different references I found or, you know, the hits that came up on Google. There's a lot of sha-na-nas. The jury is out, but it looks like and sounds like sha-la-la-la.
Sha-la-la-la.
It is sha-la-la-la. Okay, sha-la-la-la.
Okay.
I want you to know that this video is called literally the best part of the Family Ties theme song, which is 9 seconds, and that's it. That's apparently the best part of the Family Ties theme song.
So awesome.
So Claire is off to meet Randall and treat his brother Alex. The area is filthy, but Randall assures her it isn't so bad inside, and he says he couldn't afford to move him to a better area. Lisa T. writes, as the chapter opens, we continue with the themes of illness and filth from the previous chapter as Claire is going to see her patient, Alex Randall. Connie writes, we do see here that Jack has some pride and brotherly affection. He is doing the best he can for his sick brother, and I believe has regrets that he cannot do better for him. And Lori,
he was real embarrassed about taking her to that location.
He almost felt bad for him.
I promise it's better inside. And I was like, oh, awkward.
Poor dude.
Poor guy. I've done that. When I have people coming over and I haven't cleaned, and like, I'm sorry, it's usually so much cleaner than this.
Lori F. writes, at the beginning of the chapter, I like how Randall is defensive when he sees Claire's reaction to where he has boarded his brother and then her admittance that he had tried to make it better inside. As they're walking through the filth, he grabs her elbow to keep her from slipping, but she reacts immediately and he removes his hand. They're like,
Don't touch me.
Don't touch this.
Don't touch this.
I feel like he had that. Whatever we talked about it last week, where he was like, whatever it is, he was still a gentleman. I think that he didn't even want to do it. It's just how he was raised.
It's a reflex. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
And both of them regretted it instantly.
Yeah.
So his outward behaviors, at least, are in line with what Claire says at the end of chapter 38. He is a gentleman. Inside the room, there were some basic amenities and food and wine. Diana describes poor Alex as, quote, red in the face, unquote. The first thing Claire does is open the window to let in fresh air, and that begins to help immediately.
You know what sick people need? Wine. I'm sorry. She's like, there's bread and a loaf of cheese, or a loaf and then a cheese, and then wine. And I was like, well, I could see where the bread and like the sustenance makes sense, but let's make sure that our sick people have wine.
But you know,
they didn't drink a lot of water.
People didn't drink a lot of water.
I'm sure the water wasn't.
There's
very clean.
A reason. And you know, we would have died out probably as a species if we didn't have wine. If it hadn't been for like beer and ales, because before people understood that refuse and things could leach into the water, and that's where like all these horrible sicknesses would come from. What am I supposed to think about that?
It's a cat in the universe.
I don't know. It just made
Ginger,
me laugh.
You are so messed up.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, but yes, if it weren't for ale, especially, and things like that, during the process of making it, the water used was boiled.
Was boiled and killed and
purified and what have you, that we probably would have all died.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of years ago, unfortunately.
Well, the next time I have a cold, I would like someone to please bring me wine.
Yes.
Because clearly it's what's lacking.
Bottles and bottles.
Bottles.
Of wine.
Bottles.
I'd be good with whiskey. I'd be good with anything that people want to bring me.
stay tuned to the end of the show and we'll send out Lene's address, her mailing address. Or her email, or her PayPal account. No, that's for money. You just want stuff.
I just want stuff. I just want alcohol.
Actually, no, you need money because people can't send alcohol in the mail.
What?
Yeah, they can.
Only if they buy it and have it shipped to you.
Clearly they can.
That was a retailer.
I'm just saying, if you bought it from a retailer,
people can't send alcohol in the mail.
I can't go buy alcohol and go to the post office and mail it to you unless I lie about the contents.
Oh, just lie about it.
Oh, well.
Is that a federal crime?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well. Okay, don't lie about it then. Don't do it.
Just don't do it.
But I'll do it on the sly.
So Claire examines Alex, listens to his cough. He is emaciated. And I love how she rolls up the parchment paper into a tube to listen to his chest, like a makeshift stethoscope. Mm-hmm. He has a bit of catarrh. She tells him.
It returns the
catarrh. I want to say catarrh. I had a hard time saying that last episode. She orders Randall to take the chamber pot and dump it outside.
That was just to get time. Really.
I know. Exactly.
Time alone.
Exactly. LNG writes, the first thing Claire always does is go toward a closed window and open it up. The fresh air not only cleaned up the smells in the sick room, it also helped Alexander's coughing spell stop. Alex was so sick. So sick. Lovely parchment stethoscope. Ingenious woman, Claire.
You know, the cold air does have something. You know, okay, I just ended up in the ER with my daughter with the croup a couple weeks ago. And it just came out of nowhere. She kind of had, you know, the snots and what have you and congestion, but it wasn't that bad. And then like 10:30 at night, she woke up coughing, could hardly breathe. We tried the whole mist in the shower with, you know, some eucalyptus oils and other different essential oils because that's worked before. And it was not getting better. And after talking to the nurses, they said it would actually be better for the croupy type of cough to actually take them outside in the cold, wrap them up and take them outside and sit outside with them and let them breathe the cold air.
Wow.
Because that actually...
Well, it actually makes it constrict.
It constricts it with the swelling. It calms the swelling and the tissues.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting.
That's kind of cool that like even modern medicine is like, go outside, wrap her up so she's not freezing, but let her breathe.
And they were like, on the way, if she has fits on the way to the hospital, you know, roll down the windows. It's cold outside. Blanket her up really good in the car and just roll down the windows and let her breathe the cold air.
Yeah. Ellen G. continues, being in Alex's room with BJR and Claire bossed him around, leaving him to clear the chamber pot. Deserving of that action.
I love that. I love that Claire is one of the women... in these, the whole series, is one of the few women in this whole series that can walk into a room with men and be like, you do this and you do that and go do it now and do it the way I want it. And they do it.
And it's perfect. And it's just, even though she was there, they didn't really kidnap her. They took her. She was their hostage or not hostage. She was their quote unquote guest. But even in the beginning of Outlander, when she's taken into custody, I guess you could say,
they recognized her authority.
Well, she speaks with enough authority.
Exactly.
Plus, I think she has enough of a track record.
Yeah.
With
being a war nurse.
Not even a war nurse. With Blackjack, he thinks she's like
a witch.
A witch. We just got through that last
chapter.
He's
taking whatever she says as like law because he's like, clearly you know something about this that I don't. You are smarter in this instance than I am. I'm going to do what you say because I want my brother to be okay. Yeah. So I think he's bowing to her witchiness, even though all she's really like projecting is
authority.
I know more about this than you, so do what I say, please. Mm-hmm.
She tells Alex that he has catarrh and consumption, which is tuberculosis, and that he has congestive heart failure. She tells him she doesn't know how long he has, but it's not long. When asking Alex if he should tell his brother about his condition, Alex says no. He'll know already. He says that they've always known things about each other. He tells Claire, quote, I know about him. It doesn't matter, unquote.
And I like her thoughts here. Oh, doesn't it? It's like, it doesn't matter to you. It doesn't affect you in any way.
Because he hasn't raped you recently.
Yeah.
Lisa T. writes, we see BJR and his familial obligation to care for his very ill brother and that BJR wishes that he were able to do more for his brother. Here we see a side of him that we have never seen, and we see Alex's acceptance of him. We also realize that there is a familial bond between Alex and Claire through Frank. Connie writes, this one passage, this one statement by Alex, gives us a lot to chew on. Apparently, Alex knows about Jack's, quote, unholy appetites and proclivities, but there's a brotherly affection between them, an understanding that accepts the frailties and sins of the wayward brother. And Lori F. writes, the way that Alex calls BJR Johnny shows a brotherly affection that is touching, and when he says that they have always known things about each other, I wonder if he really knows the extent of what his brother is and has done. I somehow think and hope not.
That's exactly what I think. I think his brother may be under the illusion that he has like
an attraction,
homosexual tendencies. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he really understands the extent of the nature of his brother because he's not. I mean, even Diana has said he's not a homosexual. He's like omnisexual, and he'll take advantage. He's a predator. He'll take advantage of whatever the situation gives him. Whoever he can to take advantage of and cause pain to. That's what he's into. And I seriously doubt his brother has any clue about all of that. But, I mean, Claire's smart enough to keep her mouth shut, so. I mean, what's the point of, like, upsetting a guy on his deathbed?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously.
It'd
be a cruel thing to do.
Claire sets about to make a digitalin extract for his heart, and she has seen Frank in Alex's face, as well as... Blackjack Randall's.
What? Like, seriously, what are the odds, though? You go back through the stones 200 years and you're plagued by men who look like your husband from the future.
Yeah, seriously.
Like plagued.
Like two men who look
pretty darn.
Like him. Yeah. It's crazy.
Of course you guys have seen the actor that plays his brother.
Yes.
That's amazing. Lawrence,
oh my gosh.
Lawrence someone, right?
It starts with a D.
That plays him?
But yeah, no, that's amazing that they, like, have you heard him talk?
No.
There were some YouTube clips. He sounds just like him too. It's stupid.
Really?
It's stupid.
I can't wait to see that.
Is he as tall as Tobias?
I don't
think that really matters.
No. I'm not saying it matters. I'm curious how tall he is because I haven't looked up any stats.
I don't know.
It's Lawrence. I just know. You're right. It's the last name with D.
I just know when I saw the pictures of who they cast, I was like, oh my gosh, how did they find somebody who looks?
Yeah. No, I want. I'm going to show you the YouTube video later so you can listen to it. But it's stupid. It's amazing.
Connie writes, having made her bargain with Jack Randall, Claire proceeds to give what care she can to the ailing Alex. She must care for Alex. It's who she is. She must make the bargain with Jack because it may help hers and Jamie's mission. But the danger of Jamie learning what she's doing is hanging over her head like the sword of Damocles. Since the victory at Preston Pans, support had been coming in from the north, but nothing yet is heard from France. Claire continues to share intelligence with Jamie. He now only calls her Sassenach in private. Lori F. writes, I wonder whether he did it for her safety alone or if he didn't want others to think he was insulting her, as they wouldn't know it for a pet name. If I heard a husband calling his wife a name that is normally an insult, I for sure wouldn't think much of him or their relationship.
No, that's true.
And it's just, I think in the bottom line, whatever it is, it's just too dangerous. You don't want to bring any more attention to yourself than you already have. You already have a wife that's a witch. I mean, come on.
Well, and she's British as well, which everybody knows she is.
Exactly.
And here she is, you know, married to the Laird. So she doesn't, and I'm sure that's part of it too. They don't want to draw attention to all of that.
Well, they don't know she's English. I mean, they know of Red Jamie's wife is English, but someone who maybe hasn't seen a broadsheet and hasn't seen Jamie with his wife won't know this woman walking around the town is English until she opens her mouth.
No,
right?
That's true.
So that's fair enough, but
I'm sure that was true the first day she showed up in town, but...
And now everyone knows her because she's walking around every day.
Everybody knows her. Right now, she has no anonymity.
Yeah.
So Claire is passing Randall's intelligence off as rumor to Jamie. Jamie does know that she is caring for Alex Randall. He still didn't know, and Claire says would never know, that she met Jack Randall regularly to receive news from the English. Randall sometimes came to Alex's room... sometimes found her while she was walking the Royal Mile. And Diana writes that it was as if she were being haunted by Frank's ghost. Mm-hmm. Out here in the middle at twilight, Frank's ghost pops out from between buildings.
Why and not? Jamie's ghost popped out in the middle of wherever that city was. But is it Inverness?
Well, he's never dressed as a soldier either. He's always dressed in like homespun or something to try to... So nobody would be able to make the connection between the two.
In case he's seen later on, he would put nothing...
But it's also safest for her not to tell him it was from him because he would never trust anything from him.
Yeah.
And we all know that it's trustworthy because he's doing it for a specific reason in exchange for...
Well, mostly trustworthy. Claire has something to say about that.
Yeah.
So he would put nothing in writing, Jack. The danger of passing on her intelligence as rumors she collected was that they could be discounted or ignored. So that was the downside. She also, however, remembered to regard the information she got from Jack with a healthy dose of skepticism, because while she believed what Jack was telling her for the most part was true, was good information, good intelligence, she also knew that he was still the enemy. And if he could loop her enough with true information and spit in a few false pieces or things to throw them off their guard or whatever, he could totally gain her trust, if you will, by having enough stuff pay off and then throw in something false that might get them hurt.
I think as long as his brother's life is hanging, he's not doing any of that, first of all. And I think that him not putting anything in writing is also important because if it is traced back to him, it ends.
Yeah.
She'll stop caring for his brother. He'll stop having information to give to her.
But really, would she?
It doesn't matter what she would do. That's his impression, is that the only reason she's doing it is for the information.
It's because what I can give her.
Exactly. Well, and it's because he doesn't understand people like her. He would never do something if it wasn't for his own gain, other than to do with his brother. That is, like, this is the only instance in which we find that BJR does anything for a reason without some benefit to him.
But you this is I mean? The benefit to him.
I know, but I'm saying he doesn't, there's no duty behind anything he does. It's not for king and country or anything else. It's because
what can he get out of it?
What can he get out of it? How can it further his career? How can it make him money? How can it, you know,
or how
what I
can
mean?
It get him
how
off?
How can it get him opportunities to
or off?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, get did off. You say that? That's
yes.
what I heard.
I did say that.
So I don't think I don't think he's capable of actually understanding someone like Claire who would continue out
who
of
be selfless
out of her drive
without payment.
Yes, without payment, who would continue? He couldn't comprehend that. I don't think it's in his psyche. I don't think
it's hard for people who are that self-serving to believe that other people aren't.
Yeah,
in general, because they're like, why would you ever do anything that didn't just benefit
that didn't
you?
Pay you or yeah. that didn't?
I don't yeah. understand that. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think because, and it could be Claire, but I think because Diana writes about it, I think there's enough evidence just because she includes it that Claire, for the most part, trusts what he's giving her
yeah.
because of exactly that.
But, she still wants it to be treated with skepticism.
She still passes it on. She has to because you never know when it's not.
Notice how she gives it to Jamie at the end of it. He's like, well, what do you think about it? And she's like, you can take this to the bank.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he still has that slight in the back of his mind of this is just a rumor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the danger.
And that's.
Claire tells Jamie about the rumor of Holly's new regiment. We see Jamie's frustration at the prince's lack of flexibility for appropriate maneuvers. The reason he insists on digging ditches outside Stirling Castle is because the Italians did so when they took Verano Castle, which is the only siege the prince had seen. And he's Italian, so it's got to be the only way.
That'll be really interesting to see how they cast this, how they play him. In the show.
I can't wait.
To hear what That's kind of an accent be. They put him in because...
Hopefully Italian.
Hopefully, but he's also in France in the beginning speaking...
And he throws a lot of French words like in French. His speech.
Yeah. So, I mean, is he going to have some sort of weird amalgam of, like, French and Italian?
He'll probably just be British. He'll probably just sound British.
I hate to say it, but you're probably right. I mean,
isn't he a British actor?
Yeah, he is. He'll
probably just have a British accent. I mean, maybe he'll pull off some sort of weird Italian amalgam. I don't know.
Claire gets his attention with a well-timed ojai, and they go find dinner together, him promising to teach her all sorts of things not to say in public.
So did they really go find dinner together, or was it, quote-unquote, a dinner together?
They left to go out to find a pub or a tavern or something. So I think they went to find actually something to eat.
Boo.
Boo, I say.
Lisa T. writes, a simple reminder of the family tie that Claire and Jamie share as she tries out a wee bit of Scots on him.
I just like the humor between the two of them.
I like that it's still there. Even in the midst of this war and the awfulness and everything else, they still have that one thing that keeps them. That's not the only thing that keeps them together, clearly, but
yeah.
It's one of the core values of the Jamie-Claire relationship is his humor and the way they interact with each other.
Stirling Castle fell, and the prince is ecstatic. Diana writes that this was disastrous. For him, the way he was acting.
Because instead of being like, I did what I wanted, I now have Scotland, he's like, now I want everything. I want everything back that may have belonged to my dad by birthright.
And in a week.
Exactly. And so instead of being happy with now we have Scotland back and I am now again the king of the Scots, I now want to go after England and take over England as well. And I think that that was really misguided. And had he just stopped at Stirling, he might have been able to stay.
Hold on to it.
Or keep it at least a while.
He plans to march on England in a week. His advisors all try to get him to reconsider.
They're all shifting in their seats like, I don't know.
There wasn't much help from the South, support-wise, from troops or money, only the North. And the Highlander soldiers were farmers who would need to return to their lands to till the land.
Because people need to eat, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa T. writes, in the next variation on the theme, we see the many Highland lairds who are gathering their family and tenants to the Bonnie Prince, but we also learn that the Lowlanders will not join the fight. the Bonnie Prince's variation on a theme as Stirling Castle has fallen, and he is determined to, quote, march into England on this day a week to reclaim all of my father's lands, unquote. So you get, that's his family tie, the mm-hmm. his father's
no, and it's,
family
it's,
connection.
It's just one more thing about people just never being satisfied with what they have. They're like, I have these amazing things, but it's not enough, because now that I have these amazing things, I want those amazing things. Mm-hmm. So now I, this is okay, I really wanted this, but now that I have it, it's not as cool as that. So now I need to put this aside and go get something better. And it's all that grass is greener nonsense that you see prevalent literally everywhere.
Yeah.
The prince speaks with Jamie. Diana makes us aware that he's wearing Louise's miniature. Jamie finds out that the prince has another task in store for him. Alas, he will not be joining him in the glory of battle. Not just yet. Jamie is tasked with going north to gather the men of Clan Fraser. So we are set up for another adventure in a coming chapter.
Awkward. Because he's never met him.
And he's, like, horrified that he's being tasked to do this.
Well, not only that, but think about it. While his father was a favored son of Lord Lovett, he was a bastard son of Lord Lovett.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
didn't he have several of those?
I'm sure. Off of some maids.
I know we're gonna get there.
We will get there.
But just had a flash of what's to come. Doesn't all the stuff that goes about, I mean, in other books, too, with Simon, right? Old Simon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't he remind you of that dude from Game of Thrones who, like, not marries his daughters, but marries woman after woman, like, has his wives killed? You know what I mean?
Oh, the guy that
yes,
no, the guy that just has babies with, like, pretty much every woman and then kills all the boys.
Not the crow that turned wildling.
No,
she's not talking about him. She's talking about
daughters.
Not the Tullys. The bridge. The
bridge
twin
guy.
Bridge guy.
I think
twin,
so. Yeah.
What are they called? What are their names?
I have no idea, but that guy, that's what I think of when I think of someone.
Didn't he play Crookshanks or whatever in Harry Potter?
Yes.
Crookshanks is the cat.
That dude.
Shut up, don't look at me like that. Who's the guy that owns the cat? Who's the guy that owns that one cat?
Mrs. Norris?
No, yeah, who owns Mrs. Norris? No, he was a squib. What was his name?
What was his name?
Don't look at me like you don't remember. You're like,
you don't remember? I knew his name wasn't Crookshanks. I was like... That was Hermione's freaking cat, dude.
Hey, it was real close.
What was his
name?
Wasn't
it a C, though? Like, Krebs, or...
It was,
Argus Filch.
Filch. It ended with a C, kind of C-H.
No, I'm sorry. Filch. His picture was right next to Alan Rickman, and I just got really sad. It was the same character who played Filch, and he played... Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, that's
who
married all of
them. Okay. So he played...
He didn't marry his daughters. He married... but he had several wives.
Oh, he was married off... Marrying his daughters off to everybody.
He was marrying his daughters off. They're the ones who did the Red Wedding. Married off... What's his name?
I don't know names. I don't pay enough attention, and I haven't read the book, so I don't know.
Who's the guy that was married off? Was it, what's his name's character?
Rose Stark, wasn't it? Oh, no,
it
was her brother, Edmund. Edmund Tully?
Yes, who's played by...
Tobias Menzies.
Tobias. He's the one who gets
Walder
married
Frey.
Off. Walder Frey. The Freys.
The Freys.
Lisa T. writes, Jamie's variation on a theme of family ties. From chapter 2, we know that Jamie is part of Lovett's regiment. Quote, the role that had listed the names in the Master of Lovett's regiment had shown those 30 men as being under the command of a Captain James Fraser of Brough Tuarach. This man was the only apparent link between Brough Tuarach and the Frasers of Lovett. He wondered why James Fraser had not appeared on Claire's list. Unquote. Now we learn how this came about. Lori F. writes, when Stirling Castle falls and Charles is euphoric about the win, I'm reminded yet again how much I can't stand him. And when he will not listen to anyone else's ideas or heed their advice and just expects his subjects to do his will despite the effect on their families and farms, it is no wonder his cause fails. Connie writes, Family connections and feelings of affection, or sometimes feelings of rejection, are reflected in many aspects in this chapter, and it is for the sake of these family ties that Claire is torn in different directions, often wondering if she's making the correct choices. Ever since Claire decided not to go through the stones and go back to Frank, there have been constant choices to be made, ethical decisions and crossroads to be judged. Should she, or they, meaning Claire and Jamie, take this route or that? In their actions, will each choice be the right one to derail the Jacobite rebellion? Will this action result in success on their mission? And what a contrasting pair. Alex, a cleric, a man in holy orders, who has the care of souls in his vocation, as opposed to his brother Jack, who revels in being cruel and in debasing others for the sake of satisfying his sexual and depraved psychological urges, but who is clearly deeply grieved at the sight of life fading from his brother. Does Alex forgive his brother for his weaknesses, or just accept him, accept them as part of the character of his brother, the only family member who seems to care for him at all? No help is forthcoming from their older brother, William, and Jack is doing what he can for Alex as to lodgings and bringing Claire to tend him, against both their inclinations to have nothing more to do with each other.
Think of how helpless Black Jack must feel right now.
Like, I can't.
Like, I can't bugger anyone to make this better. There's no one I can bugger right now to make my brother not die. And how helpless he must feel.
Connie continues. I believe this glimpse of Jack's humanity and Alex's affection for his sinning brother is part of Diana Gabaldon's brilliance at portraying the whole of the human experience. It is also a bit troubling to grasp for readers who might not want to have any shades of gray interfere with their satisfaction of regarding Jack as 100% thoroughly satanic villain. No, Jack has some bit of good and humanity and human feeling, it turns out, and that leaves the reader's feathers ruffled, having suffered BJR's treatment of Jamie and Claire and the lingering echoes of trauma at Wentworth. Which brings this verse to mind. There is so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us that it hardly behooves any of us to talk about the rest of us. And that is from Edward Wallace Hoch.
I felt like that should end with something about Festivus.
I like that too.
For the rest of us.
For the rest of us.
Finally, Lisa T. writes, and get ready because the drums, they are a bangin'. The countdown clock to Culloden is beginning to tick faster, and Jamie and Claire are helpless to stop the impending slaughter.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right?
Boom, boom, boom. So, what did you think about this nice, sweet little chapter?
I don't like how it made me feel on so many levels.
Nah.
I don't like feeling things for Jack. I don't like the way that the prince is manipulating everyone around him.
I don't think he's really manipulating. I think he's just forcing them to do what he says because he's their prince.
But isn't that a form of manipulation? Like, he's using his position of power to make people do what he wants?
I definitely don't think it's manipulation because he's... What's the word?
It's more coercion.
I don't even think it's coercion.
There's no one standing in his way.
It's expectation. He's...
Entitled?
Oh my, yes, thank you. It's entitlement. It is 100% entitlement. And that's what absolute monarchs did, although, I mean, his dad who's quote unquote King of Scotland, so, or Scotland and England, whatever they claim. So, yeah, but 100% entitlement. And he's like, well, I mean, a prince, I'm not the king, but yeah, I'm royal, you're my subject. There's no question. I give an order, you follow the order. It's the way the world is.
Okay, well then...
It's not coercion.
I revise my statement and I say that I don't like his entitlement.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Because it's dumb.
So basically you would not want to live in a world with monarchs.
Clearly not.
Not absolute monarchs.
I don't like his... it's not just him. I guess this is everybody. The people who like strive for one thing in life and then they get it and they're just never satisfied. And it's so frustrating because I'm like, you literally got everything you wanted. You got it. It's in your hands. Why are you fucking this up now?
I have one thing to say about that. If I had won, even a good sized little chunk of that Powerball, I would be satisfied forever.
Yeah.
Dude, we little. Could take the podcast to Antarctica.
Why would we do
probably
that?
We
that
wouldn't.
Sounds awful.
My point is.
That sounds like a terrible
like
idea.
Real cold.
Well,
really?
Whatever. Take
I
it
have
to
a
each
friend. I'm going to Antarctica. Her
seriously?
Seriously.
On purpose?
I think
it,
on purpose.
I think
they were
be
sent
fun.
There?
No.
As a penance?
Well, you know, they live in D.C., so it's freaking cold there, so it's probably can't get that much colder.
Oh, it can. Oh, it can. There's parts of Minnesota that are like negative 20
cold,
and more.
Oh, so cold. So cold.
There's parts of Alaska that are like negative 30.
There are so many reasons that I live where I live, and the reasons why are it doesn't snow.
I live where I live because I was kind of brought up here, and my family's here.
Well,
so...
brought up here, and your family's here, but
because me I don't and
think
the summers,
I know
I well
no,
in
you,
Scotland, it's
you
not.
Burn.
I burn. I wilt. I sweat.
I'm like,
and become,
I love.
You turn
the
like the most beautiful golden brown after 5 minutes in the sun. You're like, hey, let's get out there
Have
and
we
go
talked
swimming.
About the time Linnea and I went to Hawaii and I came back looking in like a refugee covered in mosquito bites, and she came back like a golden goddess.
This is the time that only time you guys went there, and you guys got stuck.
We got stuck during 9/11.
What a place to be stuck.
It was hey, we were in paradise, stuck on an island.
But I didn't know you came back. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that you, because they have mosquitoes and I am allergic
I found
as
them
well.
All. They all found
them
me.
All.
They like her O negative
they do.
Blood.
My O negative.
Special. It doesn't surprise me that Linnea came back golden goddess because she does it every summer.
I did everything she did.
Did you lay out?
Yes. I did everything she did.
Mosquitoes. You got more freckles.
I did.
She did. I remember that. Did the mosquitoes come to the beach?
No.
It was everywhere else we went. We went out one night to go stargazing. They found me. We went on a
kayak. And you know how many
kayak.
Mosquito bites I got the whole
None.
Time we were there?
Zero.
None.
Oh, my gosh.
My only solace was that I kept her awake at night scratching. I'm like,
I was like, you're gone somewhere. Stop scratching.
Were you guys in a timeshare or in a hotel?
Yeah. Okay.
Did you sleep together?
Yeah, there was one bed, but I went to sleep with like wet towels on my legs.
She did. She
and like all my body.
Oh. No, Calamine.
And then she bumped me. I'd feel this dampness. I'm like, oh, ew.
That's kind of gross. So what about Calamine lotion?
I mean, I think we had some, but it wasn't enough.
Oh, dude, I don't know how I do. Well, I know very well how I do with mosquitoes. I don't do well.
No, the worst bit of it was that we'd go to these amazing places, and I
and you
hated
were miserable.
Every like we went out, and there was this
you
big.
Didn't hate every
I know, just
of
most of
it.
There was this big open field, like out in front of the timeshare we were staying at, that was just like grassy and whatnot. And
well,
we
it
just,
was a golf course.
I know.
It was like
so we just ran out in the middle of the night course. And took blankets and stuff to sit down, and there was like. Meteor showers, and it was gorgeous,
and it smells like plumeria because there's plumeria blooming all around us.
And like, I'm just like, I'm literally sitting there.
I didn't even know she was getting eaten alive. All of a sudden, after about 20 minutes, half hour, she's like, I can't take it. I gotta go inside. I'm like, What are you talking about? It's what?
It's
she's
so
like,
beautiful.
The mosquitoes are eating me alive. I'm like, seriously? I haven't had one land on me. Not
she's
one.
Like, it's so beautiful. I was like, it is. It's so beautiful. Yeah, it was bad.
Just okay. Speaking of itching, and this reminds me of the chapter about lice.
Mm. Oh.
Stop it, because I'm going to start scratching everywhere.
I already am. Did you not just see me scratching my head?
I did. Have you seen me scratching my and Linnea?
Just don't talk about the gecko that attacked Summer.
Ah, that was amazing. That was
awesome. Did you eat it?
No, I screamed like a little girl.
She screamed.
You are
so
little
loud.
Girl.
It jumped on her.
In the timeshare outside.
Yeah, they were inside.
They get
in the house. My issue, and I stand by this statement. That I don't have a problem with touching wildlife. It's when wildlife wants to touch me without my permission that I have a problem.
Well, I will admit.
They didn't sign
trying,
the permission
we
slip.
We were trying to
get it
off the ceiling, carefully get it off the ceiling, like scoop it into like something. And it jumped through what I was trying to catch it with and landed on her.
Did you freak out?
Oh, I screamed like a little girl.
Did anybody come see you like, what happened?
She screamed so loud.
Oh, it was bad.
And then
it
scuttled under the stove
like
and I'm like, well, I guess we'll... Oh, well, I don't know what to do. I'm not pulling a stove out.
Did your scream sound anything like, sha-la-la-la?
No, it did not.
It did not.
It sounded like
It sounded
spiders
like someone was
and,
killing her.
Yeah, it was death.
Like it was death?
It was death. It was like that. Like it was like the death rattle of being murdered.
Like
it was
she screamed so loud.
Oh.
It was awesome.
It was like I was bathing and somebody dressed like a woman, like through the shower curtain
like
open
a psycho
and
scream?
With a, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Like a psycho scream.
So this little chapter has... stretch out and has little like wings like mosquito wings.
Always mosquitoes.
Okay, stop.
Let's stop
itchy, itchy stuff. Stop. But Hawaii is gorgeous. Okay, so that was chapter
39, entitled Family Ties. Join us back next week when we discuss chapter 40.
Oh gosh, we're in the 40s.
Which is entitled The Fox's Lair.
Oh, so you know, because at the end of the chapter, we already were told that Jamie's been given the task of charging north and returning with the men of his grandfather.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't know.
We'll see.
Awkward.
Oh, gosh.
Could you imagine?
We'll see how that ends up.
It's like he's never even met the guy.
I mean, I'm just thinking of like, having anyone come up to me and be like, okay, because you're my trusted whatever, I need you to go and do something for me. I need you to go talk to that one person in your family that you haven't spoken to literally ever. You kind of hate each other, but I need you to do it for me. And I need you to be nice to them because I need you to get what I
need from these troops.
So I need you to get him to give up people. I need you to suck it up, get out there, you know, kiss his ass and bring his people, whatever it takes.
And imagine him being Lord Lovett and having like your grandson come and tell you you have to bring all your men. He'd be like,
it's like, who are you?
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, to his credit, the old fox, well, he historically like played both sides.
Yeah.
And he did end up getting axed.
That means something different now.
Axed?
Playing both sides. You knew where I was going.
That, yeah.
Doesn't mean the same thing anymore.
Summer in my brain always goes to the same spot.
We're parallel. We don't. Actually, maybe we're not parallel. We like always meet. You and I are parallel.
We're perpendicular.
We're perpendicular. We always find that spot. You and I are like always.
We'll have a lesson on geometry next week.
Please do.
Freaking whore.
It wasn't Summer. You. It's Summer. What are you talking about?
That was rude.
It wasn't rude. It was funny. Lene, it wasn't rude. It was funny because I was like, oh, you're right. Parallel.
And
I fell into.
After that, we'll have an English lesson.
Stop and then it. The grammar. And then after that, geography.
Oh, gosh.
Because I don't remember where Dubrovnik is.
But, you know, you and I can do the anatomy lesson, right?
Wait.
I'm way better with male anatomy than female, if you remember.
I'll do the kitty analogy.
Oh, anatomy. Kitty, what's a kitty analogy?
And that's thank you so much for listening.
Meow. My beaver. That's what I
call. Your beaver?
Kitty analogy.
Oh, Lord. Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.